And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 13th of September. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And it's a busy one as always. So we've our Friday panel coming up between 11 and 12. And a very exciting part of that is we will announce the winner of the Irish Music Month competition, as you've been hearing for quite some time now. Four great acts, and one of them will be crowned the winner from a Highland Radio perspective and go on to represent us in a major national competition. So that's coming up between 11 and 12. But between now and 10, we have our Friday panel where we run through some of the bigger stories of the day and the week, locally, nationally, internationally. And a great panel as always. Today, Professor Pat O'Connor, Professor of Sociology and Social Policy Emeritus at University of Limerick. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Is that the right way to pronounce that, emeritus?
Well, emeritus. Mm-hmm. It's just a posh word for basically retired.
I like it. Yeah, let's go. I like to posh it up sometimes, no problem. Councillor Declan Meehan, Independent in Milford. Good morning to you, Councillor. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Greg.
And Emer McGuinness, Manager of the Donegal Mart. How are you, Emer?
I'm good. Thank you.
Right, good to have you on the show. Apple this week lost its fight against the European Commission's ruling that it underpaid $13 billion in tax due to Ireland. The European Court of Justice has set aside the judgment of the lower general court, which previously overturned the Commission's decision. Despite its efforts not to, the government will now receive the $14.1 billion, including interest. Taoiseach Simon Harris has already said it can't be used for day-to-day spending, but why not? Do you agree with what he has to say, or Declan Meehan, how do you think that money should be spent?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to kind of highlight the ideological approach that the government have taken to this particular case. I think most people will be incredulous to the fact that the government didn't want to take the $13 billion in order to give Apple and companies like them significant favourable tax breaks, as opposed to coming into the national coffers for look, at maybe it can't be used for day-to-day expenditure because of spending rules. Those spending rules, I think we're all aware, the government flouts when it suits them, that are set down by the fiscal rules from the European Union. So we see no reason why this money can't be used for day-to-day expenditure. But furthermore, look, we have a huge infrastructural deficit in this country, whether it's public transport, health, or most importantly, housing. So there is a significant tranche of cash there now that the government can tap into. And I think that this is going to become a huge issue ahead of the next general election, how this money could be spent and should be spent. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think that there is no shortage of projects, no shortage of expenditure that this can be used for.
Like, my understanding of day-to-day spending is it couldn't be used to put in place a pay rise for nurses or Gardaí, or it couldn't be used to increase social welfare payments because that money might not exist to continue those payments into the years ahead. But that doesn't mean it couldn't be used for targeted supports for people who are the most needy. And I'm thinking of the families of the, say, for instance, 230,000 children who are in poverty as it relates to being able to feed or be clothed. So, I mean, that would have a feeling of one-off of day-to-day spending, but it would be once-off support potentially. I mean, there is scope there if there is the will, Declan.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, as we've heard, in particular in relation to child poverty, we've heard previously Leo Varadkar talk about his commitment towards eradicating it, hasn't made so much as a dent in it. And now we have another Taoiseach, another Fine Gael Taoiseach, Simon Harris, parroting the same sort of rhetoric. So we need to see actual measures to do that. It is a huge, huge issue and a huge problem. And it's here in Donegal as much as it is anywhere else. And it's a huge problem that we're faced with on a day-to-day basis. This $14.1 billion can make a huge, huge impact in this country. I think that there's a list of priorities there, and even with a division based on priorities, each area could receive a hugely substantial amount of money to make significant progress in relation to child poverty, in relation to supports, additional supports for people affected by defective blocks, for example. Any of those issues that are crying out for investment, housing again being one of the major ones as well.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Pat O'Connor, I mean, the argument I presume could be made, and I haven't really heard it articulated too often, is that, you know, we had to resist this money, did we not? Because otherwise it would be to admit that we had a dodgy tax system. That's all done and dusted now, and we still reap the rewards of, you know, billions, 30-odd billion in 3 years in corporation tax. So maybe the government played it right. We're getting this money anyway. We've defended our position on previous tax regimes, which now look historic. And, you know, we still have a great income from corporation tax. You know, some might feel the government got it right.
Well, yes, except there was cost. Obviously, this legal water battle that's been going on has had a considerable cost. And I suppose I often think, you know, when you actually, I don't know, has it cost 10 million, maybe more, the actual legal fees. And I'm afraid, I'm the kind of person that I think, you know, what could that have done if it hadn't been spent on? And I'm obviously not thinking of bike sheds, you know, in terms of...
10 minutes past nine. I thought the bike shed would come in slightly before that, but it'll do. It'll do, Pat. Go ahead.
So that obviously, I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, in terms of, I suppose, my priorities, yes, housing, but also we've been promised for about 15 years that we were going to have a Scandinavian-style childcare system. Does anyone remember people saying that round about 15 years ago? And we're still limping along. I mean, one of the great ironies is actually women are the most highly educated people in the country relative to men. They're more highly educated than men. And yet anybody who knows anybody who's small children and is trying to be in paid work, it is very difficult. Basically, the childcare system, okay, it's been improved, but it still is rickety, is the only way you could put it, you know? And with the childcare providers pulling out, because basically the system, as they see it, even with the increased grants, it's not financially viable. So I would love to see something done with that, because effectively, I mean, in terms of capital expenditure, what the government needs to do is to provide centres, small local centres, otherwise people will have to drive miles and it will be entirely again counterproductive. And that requires basically resources on a huge level. It's basically trying to create a system like the primary school system. So that would knock. And my second priority, I would also like to see, like it is, I think it's extraordinary that we are now getting clearer and clearer on a dreadful tradition of sexual violence. And yet the people who are actually dealing with the fallout from this are overwhelmingly poorly supported voluntary organisations. You know, there's no state involvement. I mean, it's completely unsustainable. And yes, I know there's a new refuge with 12 beds opening in Wexford. 12 beds, you know, I mean, the scale is... So those are obviously housing is related to child poverty. I mean, I just can't get my head around 4,000 children with no homes, you know. I think it's just diabolical.
Yeah.
Some of my priorities. But yes, I think we need to see effective and careful financial management, and we need to get to the bottom of the bike shed.
Okay.
Involved, they need to be absolutely banned from any involvement in the 14 billion.
But that won't happen. And you're sort of hinting at a question I want to ask in a moment. Emer McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mart. We're going to have access to that money now. Do you have a preference as to how it would be spent?
Well, we can all have preferences, but I don't think we'll actually, they'll decide what they're going to do anyhow, and we'll have nothing to do with it. But I do think, as Pat says, you know, like the bike shed, there's certain things that should be followed through, and we should be able to see exactly what happens. As regards, it was disgraceful, but we'll never hear really what happened with the bike shed or who was responsible for that. And it's like this money. We actually, at the minute, are a very cash-rich country, but yet there's so many people, normal, everyday people, struggling. You know, and Declan and Pat both said about different areas it could be used. There is any range of services that needs money and needs investment. And, you know, you go out to work on a daily basis, you hear a sad story about somebody. It's awful to think that we're such a cash-rich country and we have this money now. And he says we can't spend it on public spending. What does he intend doing with it? Was that question actually asked of him? I didn't watch it. So, you know, it's crazy, the decisions that are made and the laws that are in place. Mm-hmm. And I was at the convention last night in Letterkenny and Pat the Cope Geller was chatting about, you know, older people. And, you know, the rules and regulations that we have in place in this country are the things that need to change. And the people in government need to do that. And they can do that. They can do it anytime they want, you know, they can bend the rules. So it will be very interesting to see what they do with it. We'll probably not be told.
You talk about this country being a cash-rich country, but it's the management of these assets some people might have concerns with. So let's take the defective concrete block scheme, for example. Yeah. It's a multi-billion...
They were there last night.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later. That's a multi-billion euro scheme, right? But it seems that it's not very well designed. That's what people are telling us, right? Then you talk about the likes of that bike shed. It's small fry, but there's a system there that decides that it's okay to spend money in that fashion. And you look at the health service, even with extra money going into it, things don't generally seem to improve. And I think maybe the penny's dropped in Britain that they have to reform the system before wasting, as they might see, any extra money on it. I think if you were to poll the public, Emer, there is there's a distrust, not necessarily with the elective government, but with the systems of this country to actually responsibly administer something like that that money.
Yeah, well, I know they talked even last night about there going to be some reform on some hospitalism. They're going to do a reform on, is it Limerick? I think they talked about that. And Pat suggested that's done throughout the country. Well, that is true. If that's what we have to do to see where the money is going to waste in the hospital, that's where it should be, because there's all this money being pumped in, but nothing seems to be improving. So we do have to look at reforms, but it's the government's responsibility to start that reform process and to look at the problems, not to just ignore them. So, and that's what I mean about the bike shed is an example. That was money that was totally wasted. So you need to actually, and I think the public needs to see where there's an investigation into that. And there is, well, we did this. They don't ever like to say they actually did anything wrong. And I think that's the problem. And we all do things wrong. We all make mistakes. But there has to be, people have to be held accountable, and maybe the people in power that are making these decisions then would maybe think more clearly about what they're doing. And that's our heads of department and our heads of decision making is wrong a lot of the time.
All right. And what is our oversight? Is it the Oireachtas committees? Because I've interviewed people who are members of Oireachtas committees on issues that, and I mean with respect to them, they don't seem to have the basic understanding of like they're given a question by a campaigner outside, they go and ask the question and that's it. They know they have not knowledge beyond that.
We would have went into the public reform committees with regards to insurance a couple of years ago, and it was a very good debate, and insurance companies were taken in, all the questions were asked, suggestions was put to them as to what would happen in the future. But the walk back out of that room and nothing ever happened. There was nothing followed up on it. You know, so what is it? They do have very good debates. It is great that we have them public reform, surely. But what happens afterwards? Is anything followed up on it? It's in the news for a week or two and that's it.
Do you have any concerns, Declan, about, you know, not what, you know, we keep talking about how rich we are and now we've got 14.1 billion into our lap. But I think if you poll the public again, they might say that they don't feel that's going to trickle down to them. And that's how we administer and manage, you know, our money and our spending.
Yeah, look, I think that, as you say, there's an innate distrust among the public around how decisions are made with regards to spending. We have on paper a transparent process with our annual budgets for spending. It goes through the Houses of the Oireachtas for scrutiny sometimes, but certainly for voting on it. There has to be a political will there to implement changes if we want to see kind of more trust.
And I know you hinted at it, but it's a very important to underline it. The most recent sort of multi-billion euro, multi-annual scheme, i.e. the defective concrete block scheme, bypassed scrutiny effectively. I mean, there was a limited light touch scrutiny, but the oversight that should be there, and I think it shouldn't be forgotten, and it will be written about in generations, that was bypassed.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, as Greg, you know, certainly that scheme in particular was bypassed in a very cynical move by the government. But it's actually a really, really common measure that the government use, guillotining legislation, which effectively removes any discussion or debate around it, whether that's financial or whether it's simply legislative. So, you know, the Houses of the Oireachtas are not afforded the opportunity that they're entitled to and that they should have to actually provide that scrutiny and oversight. But look, I think that one of the key issues here is that whatever reforms that we need to see, there has to be a political will. The government of the day has to be willing to use the political capital that they have to change structures that are in place to actually ensure that there's trust in the processes. And as you say, Greg, that whatever expenditure takes place actually trickles down to people who need it and who are entitled to it.
I might start with you just in relation to the convention last night. You mentioned it. I don't know what the buzz was like. What was the reaction to Pat the Cope Gallagher being added to the ticket?
I think everyone was delighted. There was plenty of cheering and yeah, it was good. I have to say I was well impressed with young Ben Harkin. He had withdrawn from the selection process, and Donal and Mandy Kelly, they both spoke very well. And, you know, if the future's bright, you know, if we have them two coming forward. So, look, for Pat, it was brilliant. There's plenty of life left in him. You know, he spoke really, really well last night. And, yeah, I think everyone there was delighted.
How do you think the two candidate strategy will work out for the party in the general election?
There's plenty of space for both of them. How it will go, there's probably an awful lot of, out there in the general public, is there a lot of faith maybe in Fianna Fáil? I don't know. But that's where Pat, I think, will do really well and do really strongly, because when you talk about, well, I know in our area, if you talk about Pat the Cope Gallagher, it's generally about him as a person. It's not really about the party. He's a very good people person. And anybody will tell you, no matter who you talk to, if you need anything at all done from him, he will help you as best he can. He might not always get it done, but he'll help you as best he can.
Yeah, I mean this almost complimentary, it's not a negative, but, yeah. You know, Pat the Cope Gallagher knows how to speak to the local, to the local supporters, even if it is seemingly at odds to the decisions that his party are making nationally. If there is one seat, could we find ourselves in a situation where Pat the Cope Gallagher takes that one Fianna Fáil seat and the sitting minister misses out? Do you imagine a situation where that could happen?
I don't think so. And I suppose everyone would like to obviously keep our minister in the county. It would be, of course, it's very important that we do that. But I do think the two seats are there. It'll be interesting to see, you know, who have we gone up for election? Have we got enough? What names have we got so far that will be running for the general election? I think Fine Gael, have they done there?
Yep.
So
John McNulty and
Nicky Bradley.
Nicky Bradley, of course. Nicky Bradley. Declan, from a political analysis point of view, right? not necessarily what I want, but what I think, right? I'm trying to phrase this as best as possible. How do you think that two candidate strategy will work with Fianna Fáil? Of course, you know, Charlie McConnell Logan in his own, Pat the Cope Gallagher back in his sort of, you know, in his the heartland of Southwest Donegal. Plenty of space between them.
Well, I suppose speaking from an objective point of view as much as possible, Fianna Fáil could not run two candidates. I mean, it would be an admission of defeat before the general election had even started. if they had only gone with a one candidate strategy. Look, at that said, obviously the two candidates that they have gone for, they've opted for experience, they've opted for, I suppose, party stalwarts. I think that the campaign will be very difficult for Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil are in charge of an awful lot of departments and ministries that, you know, there are huge, huge failings in, most notably housing, in particular, that has huge resonance in this county with defective blocks. Dara Ryan has to be one of the most unpopular housing ministers this country has ever had, particularly in Donegal. That's a Fianna Fáil, it's a Fianna Fáil brief. We also have the same Fianna Fáil or control of health. That's not a popular
portfolio. But we also have to look at the results of the local election. And, you know, both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael do enjoy a lot of faithful support here in County Donegal. So presumably they hope that...
Greg, I think you might be able to say that about Fianna Fáil, but if you look at the numbers that Fine Gael took in in the local elections, I don't think that's the case. You see a party in free fall in the county at the minute, rudderless. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. I think that, you know, no more is what Eimear has said there. An awful lot of local election politics is on a personal basis as well. So it'll be interesting to see how much that Fianna Fáil votes actually translate. But there is a huge amount of
anger. I think it's 41% the variance between how someone might vote in a local election versus a general election. I've had that stat from back at the locals. I think it's around about 41-42%. Are you running this year, this time around, Declan?
Is that question directed at me?
Well, Eimear, no. Is Declan running this time? Have you made a decision or?
No, I will not be running in the general election. Yeah. No, absolutely not. I couldn't do it to my family, friends and husband again soon after the locals.
Have they not suffered enough?
I'm very, very happy to, with the mandate I have, is in local government, and that's what I intend to do and do my best for the people in Milford Electorate over the next 5 years.
Okay, Pat O'Connor, Fianna Fáil, obviously the Minister, Charlie McConnell-Logue, they split it into two areas, so he was the only candidate for Donegal North, if we could call it that. Micheál Nochtain, who would have been, I think, probably almost equally as a vote winner as Pat the Cope Gallagher, given his popularity in the south of the county and beyond that. But, you know, that's where he'd be looking for votes. Do you think Fianna Fáil can return to in Donegal, Pat?
I really don't know. I mean, I do think Pat the Cope, like, he's legendary, not just in Donegal. Like, you'd want to be dead not to know Pat the Cope. I mean, not to know of him. To be honest, I do think that the minister will have his work cut out. He wouldn't be I'm way outside Donegal, but certainly on the national level, I don't think he's that popular. The way he has, in a way, he seems to be very good at setting up committees and groups, and he did a volte-face on one of the farming policies. So I think that it could be possible that Pope gets elected and the minister doesn't.
Possibly, but Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue's popularity was underestimated before and he went on to top the polls, so I certainly wouldn't rule anything in or out. But that's your view and that's why I asked you for it and I appreciate it.
Now, I do think that Declan's point that in a way Fianna Fáil has a lot of sticky ministries going in housing. He didn't mention education, which, I mean, continuing the educational inflation, there was a recent poll which showed that a lot of people, the majority, were not in favour of that. So between housing, health and education, those are the three of the most difficult issues where it's very hard to show progress, and that is a considerable challenge. On the other hand, I do think that Sinn Féin, which was about a year ago, it was almost certain that Sinn Féin would be in government. Their loss has waned.
I was never fully convinced about that, but I do take your point. Well, obviously, last night, defective concrete block campaigners protested outside the Fianna Fáil convention. The government has received some criticism in recent weeks for its lack of support, as some would phrase it, for homeowners struggling with the grant scheme and decisions to downgrade homeowners. There's also concern that any grant scheme enhancements will not be retrospective, though, to mention Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue again, he's hopeful they will. So, I mean, obviously there was some confusion. Was it on? Was it off? Was it going to be a go slow or boots on the street or whatever? But one way or other, the turnout last night was pretty low. And I think I'm not sure, and I'm open to correction. I think there was one, obviously, 100% redress councillor there. One can't go because of health reasons. Two, unless they turned up late, and I'm open to correction, weren't there. And a relatively small crowd, given the thousands upon thousands that are so deeply affected. It was short notice. It's in the heart of Letterkenny, and people probably had very good reason for not going. But would the likes of Minister McConnell Logue, Emer, look out the window and see the crowd and think, you know, well, there you go. It can't be that bad.
I don't know. Is it still going on? When I know Minister McConnell came in at about, I think it was about 7-ish. I don't know. Is it even on, still going at that stage? It was a very peaceful process. Look, we just drove past them and went in. There was no... it was a peaceful protest. What it was in aid of, I don't know, because was there the media, you know, yesterday evening? What was it in aid of at the convention?
It was to highlight the dissatisfaction amongst homeowners that, for one important...
We already know. There's massive dissatisfaction, you know, and something should be done for them. Do you know if they are their candidates? How many candidates have they gone forward for the general election?
Has yet to be determined.
Yeah. Well, if they could get a candidate elected, you know, if they all row in together, and the votes that went to the local elections, you know, all come together. So, and I think that's probably what they should concentrate on. Standing on a road going into a Fianna Fáil convention, I don't really know what...
Well, it sends a message in that yous are all going in there as Fianna Fáil members, and at the same time, there are people up and down the county and further afield who were told to get on this scheme early because it's a great scheme and it'll be enhanced and no one will be left behind. And now they're being told that, well, you might be left behind. People who were told that their house would be up for full demolition, and they're being told in the hundreds, actually, it's only the outer leaf, even though they know their foundations are rotting and the internal walls are rotting. And also the fact that an ongoing promise that we'll follow the science, but the science isn't being updated, yet people are still being encouraged to go onto the scheme. That would just be a small example as to why people might feel the need to protest outside of Fianna Fáil Convention.
Greg, I don't disagree, but I would be concentrating on getting all your votes together, getting somebody elected, and doing what is actually going to get results. Standing on the side of the road, I really don't feel where that was going to benefit them last night. That's just my view. You know, they should be on the radios. They should be on the television.
They're never off. This is pure desperation, Emer. They're constantly campaigning on social media. Mm-hmm. We've had a week of coverage on this show. I think really the fact that, you know, you're probably in Ocean FM's transmission area, the truth be told, between that and the national media, the fact that you're not aware that they're trying so hard talks to how little attention they're actually getting. Declan, sorry.
I'm not saying they're not trying hard. And I think it's absolutely awful that they're in this position. To be quite honest, you know, exactly what they wanted should have been done, and should have been done a long time ago. And the fact that they have to go to these lengths to do it is an absolute disgrace. From going in there last night and going past it, I don't know if they benefited much. That's all I'm saying from what they did.
I think it's important.
Declan, come back in there, yeah.
I think it's important to point out that if members of Fianna Fáil believe that there's no point in people protesting with their heart on their sleeve, begging for intervention and for better outcomes from this process, this so-called enhanced effective concrete block scheme, if Fianna Fáil members can't see why people would be doing that or what the use is, then they're not listening. They're not listening. There should be a use to it. I think that one of the key things that defective concrete blocks, people affected by it, and the campaigners who put in a long, long, long slog on this, give up so much of their own free time on this, one of the things that they're very frustrated by is the constant and consistent messaging coming from Fianna Fáil that this is a good scheme and they feel like they are being gaslighted by members of Fianna Fáil in particular. And that is from the top to the bottom of Fianna Fáil. It's party members, it is councillors, it is TDs and senators, and it is right up to ministers and the Taoiseach as well. So I understand why they were there. I was only sorry not to be able to join them myself. I had a pre-arranged clinic in Fannad yesterday, so I couldn't make it up to it. But I completely understand their frustration, and I understand why they are targeting a Fianna Fáil convention, selection convention in particular, because it is Fianna Fáil who are in charge of the housing ministry. As I said, the most disastrous housing ministry we've had, or housing minister we've had in Dara Ryan. And also, campaigners and councillors have been promised a visit by the housing minister to Donegal on this issue, which is yet to happen. So,
well, it's not scheduled. There's no meeting scheduled.
No, there's no meeting scheduled. We were told that it would take place over the summer, potentially. There was a motion of no confidence passed by Donegal County Council in the housing minister at one of our first meetings as well. Any housing minister worth his salt or their salt would be in the car up to Donegal to meet with people immediately if that happened, if they know that there's such a level of dissatisfaction there. This isn't news to them. It isn't news to Fianna Fáil. And that's why protesters were there, well, and they were right make sure that it's highlighted.
You know, can I just come back
That's exactly what I was going to invite you back on before I bring Pat in, yes.
To think or to say that Fianna Fáil members, I'm a member, do I not care? That is so wrong to think or say that. And I've been on many programmes here where we've discussed that. And I do think it's absolutely disgraceful. I just said from last night, was it a successful protest for them on their behalf? And I really hope to get somebody elected and to push forward and do that. And from their point of view, was it a successful protest last night? We brought that round to should they have been there or why would they do it? And did they gain anything? That's not what I meant. What I was saying was, do I think it was successful protest from their point of view last night? No. A joke. You said, Greg.
Yep. Yeah, okay. I'll tell you, I think what Emma's saying, I'm just going to say it whilst that connection's reconnecting. Are you there, Emma? Emma? Yeah. Sorry, you were saying, I think you were going to say that you were responding to how I framed the protest.
Yeah, you had said about the protest and it wasn't overly successful from their point of view.
Well, I asked would the likes of Minister Holland McConlogue look out the window and say, right, okay, we must be doing okay given the amount.
I'm not actually sure. Was it still ongoing when Mr. McConlogue?
I get you.
I think what's key to say there is the protest was extremely successful because everyone was talking about it all day yesterday, and now we're talking about it today. And so regardless of the numbers, and I think the numbers were absolutely fine. What I'm saying is the success is we are now talking about it, and that is all the campaigners are trying to do, is to make sure that it is not forgotten, particularly in a Fianna Fáil selection convention context.
All right, Pat.
I think it was very successful.
Pat, do you want a quick word on that before the break?
Well, it does sound as if there were issues around the sheer organisation and or that they're feeling that their confidence in Fianna Fáil solving the problem is at a low ebb. I don't know which of them was the problem, but that certainly those two would strike outsiders as competing explanations. And the fact that the minister hasn't met them, Declan's point, would suggest that they were not confident that Fianna Fáil would give priority. I would say, Eimear, even if they get somebody elected, there still is the important person is the minister. One candidate,
correct.
One independent candidate won't cut a lot of ice in Dáil Éireann, so that it is really critical that whoever the power holders are going to be in the next election, that they are convinced and they are supported.
And that's where the 100% redress of big decisions to make coming up to the general election, because if they run a candidate and are successful, do they displace what might be seen as an ally in Pádraig McLoughlin, or the minister in Charlie McConnell Hogan. That's all to be played out. Okay, we'll take a break. It's a 4-minuter because it then clears the decks for us to chat up until 10, and we'll return with a question. Firstly, to Professor Pat O'Connor. We are in the company on this Friday morning of Professor Pat O'Connor, Councillor Declan Meehan and Emer McGuinness. Now, the Irish Aviation Authority has proposed implementing a seat capacity limit of 25.2 million at Dublin Airport for the summer 25 scheduled season. It's part of its efforts, I think, to meet a 32 million euro passenger cap. This was set out in a 2007 planning condition for the development of Terminal 2 at Dublin Airport. They're going to breach that cap this year if they haven't already. Earlier, Ryanair warned that these restrictions would lead to 500 euro one-way flights to London over winter. So, Pat O'Connor, we built this second runway. We're very reliant on tourism, and also we also like to get out of Ireland now and again as well. Is it crazy, this cap? Is it time it was lifted? Or do you agree with, I think, was it Jack Chambers that said we should fly to Shannon or Cork and bus or drive our way into Dublin if we want to visit?
First thing I'd say is that I can't understand how this was 2007. We're now 17 years later. How come somebody didn't anticipate this and begin to take action? We can't, the state cannot just breach planning regulations. You know, I think Michael O'Leary is being ridiculous to say, you know, it just requires a letter. We can't have that kind of carry on. But on the other hand...
Well, we can interfere with planning matters for the greater good. I know that's not quite how it's
termed. I mean, in a way, 17 years somebody could have looked. Now, I suppose I do think that the development, it's not clear what the government's attitude to regional airports are. For example, Waterford has been like out of commission for years. And there are a lot of Southeast that are trottling up to Cork or Dublin that would much rather fly out from the Southeast. And yet, so the government's policy on regional development is inconsistent, because on the one hand, they're encouraging Limerick, Shannon, Knock, Cork, etc. But on the other hand, there's been no development. Although,
yeah, but if I want to go to London, though, I take your point, but if I want to go to London, I don't want someone to tell me fly to Dublin and get a train to London, Birmingham, sorry, and get a train to London. It's the capital city. People want to fly into the capital.
And, I mean, I'll just stick with a local point for a minute, my local. People would like to fly from Waterford to London, right? Just as people in Donegal would like to fly, would like to avoid travelling up to Dublin. So, okay, I'd like to see a consistent regional development. I do think that the cap needs to be increased. I do think it should be done in a legal way. I don't like, you know, this kind of bypassing total systems. I think it ends up in chaos and also nod and wink and how's your father. But I cannot understand how in 17 years nobody has noticed that this cap was going to be a problem.
I think Michael O'Leary would argue that he's been banging this drum for quite some time.
I mean nobody in the civil service, in the politicians.
I hear you. Emer, time to lift the cap?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and as Pat said, you know, the fact that we didn't see this coming. And again, our civil service, it's our civil service, the hospitals the way they are, the Department of Agriculture and every department within the country. They run the country, basically. So, yeah, it's disgraceful that it hasn't been seen. It hasn't been flagged. And we're talking about that now in 2024. But there would have to be investment in a lot of the airports that they're talking about using. Is it financially viable to fly? You know, that's the next thing. If Mr. O'Leary was given incentives to do it, I'm sure he'd do it. Or they had actually sat down in a proper conversation about how it could work. You know, we're only basically seeing the start of the talks now. So, yeah.
Well, what do you? I presume the cap was put in place. In 2007. I should know this. I can't imagine it was necessarily for environmental reasons. I presume it was part of the to appease local residents and flyovers and that type of thing. But I mean, obviously, you know, it when we're so reliant on tourism, some would feel, Declan Meehan, that it, you know, we're biting our own nose off or hand off or whatever the phrase is.
Yeah, look, I think it's a really interesting discussion. As you said, Greg, it's one that really has been going on for a long time because my career has been highlighting it again and again and again. I think we have to kind of take a step back and look at Michael O'Leary. His desire in life is to make as much money as possible in a short period of time, right? So he's going to look at stuff that is only commercially viable, as Eimear has said as well. If we provide incentives for more regional or for regional airports to be used more, I think that can only be a good thing, particularly for us, for those of us living on the West Coast. It would be fantastic to see more than two destinations out of Donegal Airport, for example. It'd be fantastic to see more affordable flights running out of Donegal as well, and furthermore from Derry Airport. But I think the other thing that, you know, we have to see, and one of the things that I think goes hand in hand with this, is the development of a regional airport is all well and good in terms of putting in place additional flights and connectivity. But the airport itself has to have some sort of connectivity to the catchment area which it serves, which Donegal Airport currently does not have. We don't have public transport servicing that airport in a meaningful way. If we want to use more regional airports, as Pat had said there, say with Waterford, we need to look at things like rail connection. Do you know, it's just like an anathema to this government to put in place any proper investment into public transport. But, you know, if we can link up regional airports to the areas that they're meant to serve, then maybe we can actually invest more in them and provide them as destinations. Like, if we're giving European visitors and British visitors and even American visitors the option to come and fly to Donegal Airport as opposed to Dublin, would that not be a better, more affordable holiday for them in general, rather than paying a tenner for a pint in Temple Bar? They could come and see what Rail Ireland is like in Donegal.
No, it means we could start charging a tenner for a pint in Donegal. That would
yeah, I'd be delighted over in the West. They could do that. But you know what I mean? I think that, like, I don't think we necessarily have to look at this as just use a different airport and get to Dublin in an alternative way. It's like we should be marketing
the island as a whole. More. Indeed. But I think they're different products, though. I still think, with everything that you're saying, and you're correct in that, I still think there is a desire for people to fly into Dublin, and you can't convince them that Knock Ireland West Airport, which I would suggest is up there as the second best, equal first regional airport in the country alongside Donegal Airport, that, you know, that they can't be enhanced and what have you. All right, okay, so something of a consensus there. A quickie here: Donald Trump, Kamala Harris still neck and neck ahead of the US presidential elections. Most commentators seem to believe Kamala Harris edged this week's debate, which according to Donald Trump will be the last, and he says he smashed it. Briefly then, who do you think will win the election on November 5th? And also, I suppose, do you care, Pat O'Connor?
Oh, I absolutely care. I'm terrified it's going to be Donald Trump.
Why does that scare you so?
Oh my God, he's misogynist. He's totally backward looking. He's a crook. He is, oh my God, he's just everything that is anathema. His policies, his everything. But I think to elect a woman who is black, oh my God, I don't know if America is ready to do it, particularly when half of the population of 350 million seem to think that there's no problem with Trump, a man who tried to destabilize democracy, who doesn't know the meaning of truth, who's sexual harasser. Oh my God.
Well, that's because he's got one or two or three core issues, and they're so important to people that they will overlook that type of activity. Eimear, who do you think gets it? I suppose we have to keep a good eye on it because it might affect us.
Well, it absolutely will. Sorry, Eimear. Yeah.
It probably will affect us, yeah, but do I care? I just think it's absolute madness that that's what they have put forward. Both of them. You know, I wouldn't be happy. Is there nothing better? Money talks, obviously, in America when that's, you know, what we have running for elections.
Are you not impressed by Kamala Harris, Eimear?
Not really, no.
What's wrong with her?
No. Well, I would say she would have was with Mr. Biden. I would say that she was on a par with him. Do I agree with all that has happened under the regime? No, I don't. And look, I just think it's madness that that is what is there, and that is all that has been offered to the American population, massive country that, yes, will probably have implications on us in trade in a lot of different ways, and that's what we have.
All right, Dr. Meehan, what's your view?
I think the fact that it's a close race, which it is, and when you look at the polling, particularly in swing states as well, I think the fact that it is a close race is a damning indictment on America, quite frankly. I think that when you have a candidate such as Donald Trump, who has complete and utter disregard for both the Constitution of the United States and the rule of law, and yet in all, you know, 50% of people are willing to go out there and vote for him, I think it's very, very, very scary. I think what's interesting, Greg, one of the things that you said there is he has a number of core issues that are clearly resonating with people. And you can see how vociferously and vehemently he speaks about those issues, particularly immigration. And that has to be a red flag to us all, because his dog whistling around immigration is bringing him support to the point where people who are concerned about immigration in America are willing to turn a blind eye to all his other numerous faults.
Well, I mean, I would argue we saw that in Brexit. So it's already crossed the water. Whether it's actually got across the Irish Sea yet, who's to say? Listen, it's always a pleasure. Declan Meehan, thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Eimear, always a pleasure. See you soon.
You too. Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care. And lastly, but certainly not least, our own Professor Pat O'Connor. Professor, thanks for your time. Take care of yourself, Pat.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. And thank you to all of you who've been messaging in with all of your comments and what have you. We'll get to those a little later on in the programme. And don't forget, too, we're going to unveil the winner of the Irish Music Month competition, which has been running for the last week or so here. It's been running in its entirety. It's been running in its entirety for three weeks, but you've been voting for a week. All those votes are in. They're being collated. And the winner, along with the input of our judging panel, will be announced between 11 and 12 today.